You are listening to a podcast of the London Irish Business Society's event, Ireland and the City, A Key Connection. This event was hosted in the Embassy of Ireland, Great Britain, in London on March 24, 2015. The expert panel of speakers included Minister Simon Harris, TD, Minister of State at the Departments of Finance, PEOR and Taoiseach, Susan Dargan, Executive Vice President, State Street, Vincent Keaveney, Alderman, City of London Corporation. The discussion was moderated by and opens with Manus Cranny, European Markets Editor, Bloomberg Television.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Manus Cranny. I was invited here this evening by Shane and the team at Libs. I work with a company called Bloomberg. We hosted the minister this morning on television. You've come to hear, hopefully, a spirited debate. I've written down here, Simon Harris, TD, the man with the ambition. Susan Dargan, the woman with the reality of running a company at State Street between here and Ireland. And Alderman Vincent Keaveney, who, of course, is at the heart of the City of London Corporation. Three very different perspectives. So without any further ado, we'll get right into it. The one thing that I would say is it's ironic in that I've lived here for 26 years. I made my bread and butter and perhaps my first couple of euros, dollars, whatever it was, from the IFSC. So I remember the IFSC as something, as a seed in the imagination of some of the founders, something that's gone on to grow to an international and global respect. So that's down to Minister Harris to make it grow further. Without any further ado, I'll hand the event across. Simon.
Thank you very much, Manus. It's lovely to bookend my day with meeting you in the morning and again in the evening. But thank you very much. And thank you to Bloomberg for providing us with an opportunity this morning as well. Ambassador Mulhall, Greta, thank you very much for hosting this wonderful event here this evening in our Irish Embassy in London. And thank you particularly to Libs and to Shane for making this happen, and to my fellow panellists, Susan and Vincent, for being here. I'm really delighted to be here this evening, and indeed to be back with Libs this evening in the Irish Embassy in London. And I hope by me being here and by this event being here and by the embassy hosting this event, I hope you see it as a signal of our intent that we want to have an engagement with our diaspora, that we want to engage with our Irish business networks abroad, and that we see that engagement as absolutely crucial to fulfilling our ambition in relation to the international financial services sector. And that is why this is one of the first formal engagements and brainstorming sessions that we've had in relation to the future of IFS since the publication of our new strategy. When I was amongst you here just in this very room only a few months ago, we were in the throes of preparing a new government strategy for Ireland's international financial services sector. And I made what I think was seen by some as a bold and perhaps overly ambitious declaration at that time that the strategy would be published in time for St. Patrick's Day. Well, I'm glad to report that this was a commitment, thanks to many people's hard work, that we were able to keep. And just a few weeks ago, on the 11th of March, I was joined by our Taoiseach and our Taoiseach for the launch of IFS 2020. And I think just to pick up on the Ambassador's point, I think it is really exciting that as a country, we're beginning to be able to look to the future again with confidence, that rather than just trying to fight economic fires, the fire is now out, and we can actually plan strategies into the future in a wide variety of sectors, including our international financial services sector. I think that's a very positive sign that I think we can all take great hope from. Developing this new strategy, ladies and gentlemen, has been a real priority of mine since my appointment as Minister with Responsibility for International Financial Services last summer. It was heartening during the process to receive such support from both colleagues in government, from industry, and indeed from the public. It's particularly gratifying to have benefited, though, from the very valuable input of the Irish abroad, of people like yourselves who are working at the coalface of international financial services. And I really thank those of you here in London, and indeed our diaspora right across the globe, for your contribution to the development of this strategy. This government has had, since day one, an ambitious economic agenda which targets export-led growth as a key driver of sustainable economic development and job creation. In that context, we recognise the clear potential for international financial services to continue to contribute strongly in the coming years to both job creation and to our growth objectives as a country. Today, across the length and breadth of the country, from Donegal to Kerry, from Dublin to Cork, more than 35,000 people are directly employed in the international financial services companies. And that's not counting the thousands more people employed in various companies that support the work of IFS across professional services. Employment growth in the sector has been outstanding, with an increase of approximately 70% in the last decade alone. It's about 55 people working in IFS at the end of the 1980s, 35,000 people today. And a point that frustrates me at times, and Manus talks about his own involvement in the past with the IFSC. IFS in Ireland is now much more than just the Docklands of Dublin. The Docklands of Dublin is still a thriving heartland of IFS, but it is literally an industry that has spread to the four corners of our island. And 12,000 people out of the 35,000 people employed in this sector are now employed outside the greater Dublin region. So we're marketing not just Dublin, we're marketing Ireland as a hub for international financial services. Such growth in employment and such growth, indeed, right across the industry really matters to the Irish government. It reflects a resilient and a competitive sector, one that's winning business against fierce international competition, and a sector that's contributing about €1 billion annually to the Irish economy. I really recognise the publication of IFS 2020 as a positive step, but I'm also acutely aware, and the reason I'm here, is that it is just a first step. It might mark the end of the beginning, so to speak, but nothing more. It's now down to the work of implementation. And notwithstanding Ireland's competitive advantages and growth trends, we clearly cannot afford to rest on our laurels. No one here needs reminding of the challenges facing industry both here and in Ireland and indeed across the globe. Disruptive change, which I'm sure is something we'll discuss during our panel, is everywhere. It's apparent right across the sector. Convergent technologies and business innovation, emerging markets, shifting demographics, regulation, evolving customer behaviour and expectations, these all dominate the agenda and conversations from the boardroom down to the water cooler. From mandatory and discretionary investment locations such as London and Ireland, respectively, this presents both shared and distinct challenges and opportunities. This is where I really believe the new Irish strategy is positioned. Its primary focus is to support the sector by harnessing the wider capabilities of the public sector and industry itself. It's about Ireland Inc. coming together. It's about ending silos. It's about all of us harnessing our energy and our efforts in one direction, and that is in the interest of Ireland Inc. IFS 2020 has a long-term vision for Ireland to be a global location of choice for specialist international financial services, building on our talent, on technology, on innovation, and on our excellent client service, and doing all of this whilst embracing the highest standards of governance. The vision emphasises a focus on specialist international financial services. We're not setting out our stall to compete on every stage against every competitor location. As a small, open economy, Ireland has certain strengths and certain competitive advantages, but we know that we need to choose our battles carefully. We have set an ambitious job creation target to grow the IFS sector by 10,000 net new jobs by the end of 2019. With that in mind, the strategy sets out 5 strategic priorities and 30 concrete actions. Let me give you a brief flavour of our plans. Firstly, we will market Ireland more effectively overseas through the development of a single banner brand and through high-level trade missions, bringing together government ministers, state agencies and industry. Next year, in February, we will host a major IFS summit in Dublin. The role of our embassy network, as we see tonight, and the overseas offices of IDA and Enterprise Ireland will be pivotal in helping us to develop new business opportunities and new strategic partnerships in the UK, across Europe, in the Americas and in Asia. And we look forward and indeed need the continued and growing input of groups like LIBS in supporting that agenda. Back at home, we will enhance our competitiveness and business ecosystem with specific actions in relation to education, skills and talent, physical and core market infrastructure and regulation. I want to acknowledge the value of the discussion that I had last November with LIBS in relation to the issues of talent, education and skills. In fact, following that discussion, we organised a roundtable consultation on the issue in January in Dublin, which was a very valuable input to the strategy. We brought together all our universities, all our institutes of technology to discuss with them the role that they have to play in linking with industry and the role industry has to play in linking with our education partners. Just because you have a skilled workforce today doesn't mean you'll have a skilled workforce in 10 years' time or 20 years' time if you don't work at it and make sure the skills you are providing are the skills that industry requires. And we're now establishing in that vein an education and skills liaison group to bring industry and education stakeholders together to address the future needs of the IFS industry. We will continue to drive research, innovation and entrepreneurship in the IFS sector, and we will develop job creation opportunities from emerging IFS subsectors and new markets. While our focus and efforts to date have been on developing the new strategy, our attention is now turning to the very important task of implementing it, making it happen. This could never be a document to sit on a shelf and gather dust. This strategy will be driven by a new public sector high-level implementation committee, which I will chair. This committee will meet with the new IFS Industry Advisory Committee, which will replace the existing clearinghouse group. This new industry committee will reflect the current shape of the sector in Ireland. It will include representatives of Irish-owned companies, which is a growing situation we're seeing in Ireland, more and more startups getting involved in the area of international financial services, and these will be joined alongside our leading multinationals. And I expect this audience will be particularly pleased to know that it will also include an international representative, and I intend to advertise that publicly through the various appropriate government websites. Supported by thematic working groups and a coordination team in the Department of the Taoiseach, it will focus relentlessly on delivery and on driving coordination and collaboration both within the public sector and between government and industry. Crucially, it will feed into the annual setting of priorities for the sector. We recognise that this five-year strategy cannot be static. The sector is simply moving too fast. It needs to develop and be able to respond to the sector and to the global environment as they both change. And we need to recognise that the strategy is just that. It's just a strategic guide rather than a prescriptive blueprint. I have no doubt that there are issues we have yet to fully explore, opportunities that we have yet to fully appreciate, and risks indeed that we have yet to fully identify. But this is where the strategy comes into play. It is a call to action for everybody in this room, for government, for industry, and one that I know we all can collectively and will respond effectively to. Before I finish, I want to acknowledge the input that many of you made into the shaping of the new strategy. I think this has been the most comprehensive consultation on an IFS strategy. We've had public consultation, we had online consultation, we had roundtables, we provided everybody that we possibly could with an opportunity to contribute to this strategy. And it's through many engagements that I had, more than 100 meetings with industry and with groups like LIBS, that we have identified the scope and the opportunities for the new strategy. Our determination as a government and my role as a minister is to ensure that the strategy is now implemented, and already we're forging ahead with that. The first quarterly progress report on implementation will be published in July, and I'm sure that many of you here today will feature in supporting this agenda. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much, Minister. Good evening, everybody. It's very good to be here with you this evening. And I should say to the LIBS, the first person I met on the way over here this morning was a consultant that we use who's based out of Ireland, works with us here in the UK, who informed me that she was actually moving with her company to the UK because of some of the work that she's doing here. So I did suggest that she contact the LIBS. So I got your next participant this morning. So I don't look for a finder's fee, by the way, but that just gives you an indication of the traffic between Ireland and London and the amount of activity that we see within our business. In terms of tonight, one of the things that I was asked to look at was, as a multinational organisation with a foot in both camps, how did we see the relationship between the UK and Ireland? So the UK and Ireland for State Street they're both very successful operations, similar in size. We have 2,500 people in the State Street family in Ireland and around 2,300 here in the UK. While they're similar in size, they are very different in terms of the makeup of those operations. The UK operation is based in the heart of a traditional global financial services centre. The product breadth that we have is reflected in that traditional financial services centre. So, for instance, we would have a large global trading operation, which you would not see as being scalable within Ireland. And the UK would also have a very large domestic funds business, fund management business, which we would build services off. In looking at Ireland, we would say that on the other hand, we have a very small domestic fund management business, but we have built a service, niche service offering for international fund managers, distributing their funds globally from Ireland. Many of these international fund managers are UK promoters. So out of the 836 fund promoters with entities in Ireland, 346 of those are UK promoters. So the UK is a very significant centre for our client base. Ireland has also been successful in developing specialist activities. For example, it is the leading hedge fund administration centre in globally, and it also has the top 10 aviation leasers are based in Ireland. State Street's growth in Ireland has mirrored the success of the industry. You know, I've said we employ 2,500 people. They're in six locations across Ireland, as the Minister said. It's not just about Dublin. We did start off in Dublin, but we now have operations in Kilkenny, Naas, Drogheda. And as part of the growth, we've also established centres of excellence. So it's not just about servicing Irish business. It's also about servicing our European and global counterparts in areas such as derivatives, legal services, and loan servicing. What are the views on Ireland's positioning relative to the city? You know, I think sometimes there may be a view that it isn't a two-way relationship, that Ireland is a poor relative to the city. It's hard to compare Ireland versus the city, given the history and scale that we see here in London. The dynamics are very different. The city has a long-standing tradition spanning hundreds of years, whereas Ireland, as we said, is still in its 20s in terms of international financial services. But having said that, Ireland's proximity to the city has not detracted from our ability to move up the value chain. We may have started out as a back office, being seen as a back office location, but today we are recognised for our specialist activities in a range of areas. A good example of this is our expertise in risk and analytics. We have built this, this has become more and more complex for our asset manager clients, and we have focused on their core, we've allowed them to focus on their core management skills while we have been able to build out the necessary scale to look after their vital areas in this growing service need. And we see this as a growing trend and one that we will help to move Ireland further up the value chain. So we consistently look at where do we need to go next in terms of growing services for our clients. And as I said, we have moved out of the back office and are moving more towards front office services in areas like risk analytics. And sometimes being a smaller centre can be an advantage. 9 out of the 10 top IT, global IT companies are based out of Ireland. And we benefit from the innovation and the new thinking that comes from these organisations. And as the Minister mentioned, you know, FinTech is a core part of the new IFS strategy. And we see the benefit of that in State Street on an ongoing basis. And then also important is looking outside of both Ireland and the UK, and in particular in terms of regulatory developments, looking into Europe and making sure that we are proactively working across all of the countries within Europe, and in particular with a focus on Brussels with the changing regulatory environment. In terms of how does State Street view Ireland's current offering, particularly with regard to skills and training, what I would say is being one of the positive outcomes of Ireland being a young financial services centre is the skill set that we have grown over the last number of years, and that is giving us very good specialist expertise. We're number one in terms of the world for skilled labour, and in terms of completion of third level education, as most people know, we are number one in Europe. That all helps in terms of giving us a young, skilled workforce, and State Street sees the benefit of that in terms of the growth of our business. There has been a considerable favourable realignment of salaries and other employment benefits over the last few years post the crisis. And for an organisation like State Street, that really helps us to attract areas like Centre of Excellence into Ireland. In terms of overall infrastructure, I would say, you know, the last few years has seen a slowdown in terms of infrastructure growth. That is starting to come back up again. And if anybody knows our office in Dublin, there has been a vacant plot right beside us for the last 8-9 years. That's about to be developed with three very large buildings. We're going to lose our view, but you know, it's a very positive outcome of the success of the IFS over the last number of years is the startup again of the infrastructure development. And as I said, you know, the infrastructure, we have grown our business outside of Dublin, and we wouldn't have been able to do that without the infrastructure that was built up over the last 20 years. So that is also of benefit to us from an overall growth perspective for our business in Ireland. Thank you very much. Vincent.
Thank you, Susan. And I'd like to add my thanks to the ambassador and to the minister and to LIBS for hosting the event tonight. It's fantastic to have an opportunity to speak. My background, I grew up in Dublin. I've been practicing law here in the city since 1989 or thereabouts. And I was elected an alderman in the city in late 2013. So I've got a foot in both camps very much. And I think that influences some of the things I'd like to mention tonight. Delighted to be speaking to you. It's a fantastic point in time in the city's relationship with Ireland. We were honoured to host the state banquet last year for the visit of President Higgins, and indeed the business breakfast, the day of the state banquet, at which the Taoiseach spoke. And I'm sure a number of you were at that. I think many of the themes that we're touching on tonight and many of the developments that have occurred since really arose directly out of that, and a recognition between the city and Dublin that we have far more in common when it comes to the financial services than those things that have divided us in the past. In particular, I think the focus that we have on open, outward-looking capital markets, ensuring that the EU regulatory framework is right for those capital markets, making them work for a united Europe in a way that some of the regulatory developments of the last 20 years may not have necessarily encouraged. Standing back, I mean, just recognizing something that all of us know here, the UK is Ireland's largest trading partner. And indeed, Ireland is the UK's fifth largest trading partner. But if you drill down into the financial services, some of the numbers are more interesting. At 25% of Irish financial software exports go to the UK, and 50% of Irish financial services exports go to the UK. So we're talking about an extraordinarily important market, both from the UK's point of view and from Ireland's point of view. All of that is against a backdrop, as we know, of a Europe and a Eurozone that is struggling. We are looking at a Eurozone where there's weak economic growth, there's low inflation, and indeed deflation in parts of the Eurozone, low job growth in parts of Europe generally. What I think we're beginning to see now is a reinvigorated European Commission, which has a new emphasis on jobs and growth, and indeed on the importance in promoting that agenda of the capital markets. And And here's an area where we in the city and in Dublin in the IFS sector can work together to make a big difference for Europe as a whole. One of the issues that we certainly see from the city perspective on, one of the issues we see is the difficulties of the fragmented capital markets across Europe, despite all of the raft of European legislation of the last 20 or so years, which certainly those lawyers amongst you in the room are familiar with. Despite all of that, the EU capital markets remain significantly fragmented, and there's much work to be done. The city really welcomed the announcement by Lord Hill of the green paper on the European Capital Markets Union back in February. That I think was a big step forward. There's a lot in there that we can pick up. That's especially relevant, I think, to the SME sector. That is an area where the city is increasingly focused, and indeed Ireland has got much to contribute to. The city and Dublin working together, I think, arising out of that visit by President Higgins, a number of positive steps have been taken. One of the things, and we can touch on some of the direct outcomes of this, was a meeting in Dublin in December of high-level practitioners, a dialogue around some of the common themes between the City of London and the IFS sector. Three particular things came out of that I think, and they're interesting because they are very common concerns. That one was an agreement that there should be a joint assessment of the Capital Markets Union proposals when they came through. Another point, that there would be joint endeavours to promote securitisation in Europe. Again, something that's very, very important in the context of the SME sector and the difficulties SME companies have in raising finance through the traditional bank sources. The third area was agreement around the need for joint promotion of credit information for businesses and individuals, for banks and for lenders. And I think that again is something that there is scope for the two centres to work together to put a better package in place against the backdrop of European regulatory developments. One common theme, I think, coming through from this dialogue is a recognition that European competitiveness in a global context is not what it should be. And that's something again, where the city which has particular focus at the moment in the city, something that we are very keen to partner with the IFS sector in Ireland to see what we can do through legislative and regulatory developments, as well as big business practices, to ensure that what we're doing in terms of labour mobility, in terms of capital markets movements, we're improving our global competitiveness against those other financial centres that are out there and developing. I mean, nobody can ignore the growth of centres in Asia, Singapore in particular, as a real alternative to the traditional financial centres of the West. I was doing a bit of graduate recruitment interviewing the other day, and happened to be interviewing a student from Singapore for a trainee contracts place at my firm, and we were talking about, in answering a question about how you might deal with a cross-border dispute. I suddenly found myself being faced with a sales job about the arbitration centre in Singapore. Which impressed me. I wonder how many UK or Irish legal students would be quite as upfront in terms of selling the equivalent services in Britain or Ireland. The other sector I think that I'd like to mention, has been picked up already by the minister and by Susan, is the fintech sector. There's been a real focus on that again in the 12 months since the presidential visit here. And indeed, there's a return visit by, I think later this week, in fact, by representatives of the fintech sector to London. They'll be meeting the Lord Mayor on Thursday. The city itself has adopted fintech as a major project. In May 2014, the city agreed £1 million investment in an organization over a three-year period to promote on a non-profit making basis the fintech sector in the UK. There's a very clear overlap with what's happening in the IFS strategy, and the ongoing dialogue I think is very important to make sure that the two initiatives come together in a meaningful way, and that we actually get a positive result that symbiosis between the two initiatives actually leads to a better result for both Ireland and the UK. So I think my message here would be that a collaborative approach in developing our financial services sector between Dublin and London, between Ireland and the UK, because let's face it, it's wider, as the Minister has pointed out, this is wider than Dublin, and here in the UK, it's wider than the city. It's wider than the city of London. There are 400,000 people working in financial services in the city, but there's 2 million people working in the financial services sector and associated professional industries across the UK. There are 22 cities in the UK where over 10,000 people are employed in financial services. So this is a UK-wide industry, in the same way that we're talking now about an Ireland-wide industry in Ireland. So a collaborative approach, bringing together the best, the strengths of Dublin, the strengths of Ireland, the strengths of the UK, to see what we can do to promote across Europe a more cohesive, more united, less fragmented capital markets and more competitive industry that will ultimately benefit both countries.
Vincent, thank you very much.
Vincent, thank you. Susan, thank you. Minister, let's kick it off with you. I mean, when you listen to your presentation up there, I mean, it's almost breathless. It goes from conception to policy in an incredibly short period of time. If you and I get together in a year's time, and hopefully we will, what are you going to deliver to this audience? Because in this room, you have human capital, you have entrepreneurial capital, and you have people who have a vested interest in knowing what their options are in terms of looking at Ireland as an investment destination or a professional destination. So you and I get together in a year's time. What are you going to deliver? What's the most important thing that you're going to deliver in FS 2020 over the next year to make it easier for people in this room to think about Ireland as a destination?
Well, I think, Manus, the most important thing that I need to deliver pretty quickly is the banner brand and is the joined up approach to marketing Ireland. I quite frankly think that's where we've got to catch up pretty quickly with an awful lot of our competitors. It's a key aim of the strategy, and if you look at the timeline for delivery, it's some of those that are emphasised to be delivered pretty quickly. So by the time we meet this time next year, there'll have been an IFS summit in Dublin. Yep. There'll be a banner brand created. There'll be an education and skills industry liaison group. And I think that'll be a lot of the housekeeping, the building blocks, if you like, in place. I think the most exciting thing that I'd hope that I'd be able to report, though, next year is progress on fintech. And I mean, there's already stuff happening in Ireland in relation to fintech. Today, Accenture had their investor pitch for a number of fintech projects. You go down to Citibank in Dublin, they have 400 people working full-time on innovation. They're coming up with new ideas in their tablets that are being used in Africa currently today in the market in real time. With three new accelerators open in Ireland in the area of fintech last year. But there's more we need to do, and there's two areas we really need to make progress on. The actual physical space for startups in Dublin. Susan talked about the return of the cranes, if you like, and beginning to see building coming back again. There are plans by NAMA to actually develop the IFSC footprint and to make it bigger. It's crucial that when we start developing the footprint of the IFSC, that we actually see startup space. You have it here in London, we need to see more of it in Dublin. And the second thing we need to do in relation to fintech is funding. We now have a number of models to provide funding to SMEs in Ireland and to fund risk in Ireland. We have the ISIF, the Irish Strategic Investment Fund, and we have the Strategic Banking Corporation of Ireland. Now, if the Strategic Banking Corporation of Ireland can have an agricultural product, as it already does, mm-hmm. I think it's my job to make the case as to why it should have a fintech funding project. So I think fintech is the exciting policy development for the next year, but the housekeeping things are things I want to get done pretty quick.
And I suppose housekeeping is what's going to bring jobs. Susan, if I can bring it to you and sort of say you have almost a 50-50 split, 2,300 versus 2,500 in Dublin versus London. When you sit with a Minister of State and obviously involved in the round tables and in the discourses, what did you lobby for? What did you say? Give me this and I can deliver more jobs.
Okay, so I think, in terms of
creating more jobs, and coming back to Vincent's point, our 2,300 is right across the UK, so not just in London. That would be a pretty expensive cost base we would have if we had them all in London. But in terms of what we need, it's the overall environment. So as the Minister said, it's around collectively promoting the industry in Ireland. It is around having the product sets to deliver. So when we talk about the having the capital, that capital needs products and structures to feed through. So we need to have an environment where you can easily roll out new products and services. And that requires both legislative and a regulatory framework that allows you to do that. So we've that is incorporated in the strategy also. So I would see that is key to development of the industry.
Vincent, you talked, I thought it was phenomenal. I mean, I don't know what most law students study or are capable of pitching themselves at final year interviews. Don't think I could have done that. What does this minister and what can Dublin do, as it were, to usurp Singapore, or to be at least seen as a viable alternative, as a level pegging order with centres like Singapore and the Middle East as well, which are aggressively seeking business?
I think the thing to do is actually what the Minister is doing in the IFS 2020 strategy, which is to identify the real strengths and to go after those strengths. I think Susan's comments echo this as well. It's difficult to be world leaders in everything, and I think what Ireland is doing by identifying those key skills and the key areas that it wants to focus on, that's the way to be a world leader, a world beater, and to look to London as well for support in what it wants to do in that. There's a great pool of talent. I mean, many of them are sitting here today. Who will be able to help Ireland in that journey, making sure that it gets to where it needs to be. And it's as I'm not going to use the word again. I'll try not to at least, but it is symbiotic here. And there's a real win-win for both centres in this strategy.
And some of the statistics that you used were very impressive, Minister. Ireland's very well known as being that land bridge from the United States of America as a technology destination, a big company technology inward investment into Ireland. But who or what do you want to attract the most? Do you want to attract, I know you mentioned fintech, and that typically is smaller in size, typically at the start. Who do you want? Do you want small, medium enterprises? Do you want services such as Keaveney in terms of law? Or do you want operational and centres of excellence? Give us a complexion of what you have in your mind's eye for 2020. How are you going to get those 10,000, Minister?
Yeah, well, the first thing is, in relation to fintech, I think it's important to see that it's not just, fintech doesn't just affect one sector. I think the thing about fintech is there's going to be disruptive change in every sector of IFS, whether you're working in an insurance company, whether you're involved in funds, whether you're in banking. Fintech is going to change the way you do your business over the next number of years. And I think if Ireland can be seen as a leader in the area of fintech and put in place the right policy bricks, if you like, over the coming months and years, I think that will help attract right across the IFS sector. So that's where I see fintech actually bridging quite a number of subsectors. I also think it's a challenge, and we've got to acknowledge this. It's 10,000 net new jobs. We're going to have to create more jobs, significantly more jobs, to actually arrive at the 10,000 target. Because what we've seen, and we see it, and Susan will know it well and talked already about cost base, I mean, we will see a churn. We will see some lower valued jobs leaving and moving to cheaper markets, if you like. We've got to get in at the specialist area. I was really excited last Friday to meet with the Governance Risk Compliance Technology Centre in UCC, which I know Susan's company, State Street, are involved in as well. This is a really exciting initiative in Ireland where our academics, the Central Bank of Ireland, and industry have come together to look at how can we actually use technological solutions to help Ireland be really good in the area of risk and compliance. And these aren't areas that companies are competing in. If we can come up with an AML product that everybody can use, there's no competitive advantage. So you can actually get all the players in a room working together. So it's those sort of things. It's governance, risk and compliance. It's the use of fintech, not just for the startups. So the startups is important and we want to create that ecosystem, but it's actually to help all right across the IFS sector as the disruptive change kicks in. And it's the acknowledgement that to get to the 10,000, you are going to lose some jobs to low-cost locations or lower-cost locations to attract in high value.
Susan, you travel a great deal. You do business with State Street. It's a phenomenal brand. when it comes to making the judgment about where the next, you know, the next phase of your European strategy comes, what are the biggest considerations when you sit in a management room? What do people talk about? What do they want when they think about location and destination? Moves beyond tax. What do institutions want?
So it does. It comes down to people and cost are the two key areas that would be looked at. So I think, you know, I spoke about the fact that we have moved up the value chain in Ireland, and that is key that we continue to do that. So we would be very closely involved in the regulatory changes in Europe. But also, you know, Vincent has now talked about the growth agenda. So areas like Capital Markets Union, where we will have new products and services coming out. Ireland is really well placed to service those products because of the skill set that we've built up over the last number of years. But we also have to be cognizant of the cost base that we have. For an organization like State Street, on a monthly basis, they look at the cost base right across the globe of all of our locations. So you're competing not just within Europe, you're competing on a global basis. So how do we attract that higher level activity into Ireland? Mm-hmm. It is building the skill set, and it is ensuring that you keep that cost base at the right level, but at the same time give people opportunity in terms of careers. And so it's not just about purely a cost play. We've got to make sure that we give people careers that they can see, that they can move up the value chain on an ongoing basis, and that we've been really successful in doing that through growth of the business, the traditional, you know, fund servicing business, but also attracting in centres of excellence for State Street, like derivative servicing, like loan servicing, which is becoming the loans industry, funds industry, is becoming very large in Europe because of the move away from bank finance into non-bank finance. So that's going to be a key growth area for us in the future as well.
I'm going to open it up to the floor in just a moment. Just a very quick riposte from each of you on this. You know, we in Ireland, we have this great history of educating and innovating with our youth, with the guys and girls who go to university, who graduate, who get these opportunities, who get reasonably well paid and get an opportunity. And then once they acquire the skills and the knowledge, they leave. What retention is the wrong word, but I'm sort of clutching at straws for the right word. You do all of this, you enact the policy, you benchmark, you pay younger guys and girls properly, and you give them opportunity to work on interesting projects. What do you need to communicate with management to keep people in Ireland rather than acquire the skills and disappear? A very quick, Vincent.
I think fascinating, interesting work. I mean, that's at the end of the day, that's what's going to keep people. That's going to, assuming that all other things are equal, and the package is a sort of package that is attractive, and that's a broader. It's not, of course, just the packages broader than the pounds, shillings, and pence, or the euro and cent that they get at the end of the day. It's the all of the aspects of the lifestyle. So, assuming that we're looking at a relatively comparable package, then I think the quality of the work is very important. And interestingly, I mean, I don't think there's, over the last 20 or something years, I don't think there's been a single day when I haven't had a piece of legal work on my desk that hasn't a connection with Ireland. Even if it's a very tangential sort of thing, I've always had that piece of work with an Irish connection on my desk. So I know that the Irish lawyers are doing fantastic work and really good stuff. So it's keeping that quality of work going, getting through the economics ups and downs. That's what keeps people interested and engaged.
Minister.
Yeah, I think while people like Vincent and Susan in their work can make sure people are engaged in interesting work from a policy point of view, I think it's the whole quality of life package. It's making Ireland an attractive place to live. It's making Ireland an attractive place to raise a family. I think we compare quite well with some competitor locations in terms of environmental issues. We see this. We often take the green fields and the fresh air for granted. Some of our competitor locations have real issues with that, Manus, as you know. But also, I think I think from a very practical pounds, shilling and pence or euro and cent in your pocket, the issue of tax is an issue. And the government, and personal tax I'm talking about here, the government started in the budget last October to reduce income tax to try and incentivize work, reward work. We want to build on that in the budget. We need to do more of that. We need to reward work so that it's worth your while to come home as well. And that's something that we have a lot more work to do.
All I need is a job on TV and I'll be there. Now, they didn't want me in RTE the last time. Okay, this is your opportunity. You know, you don't often get a minister in front of you that actually volunteers to come to an audience like this. And Susan and Vincent are here. So this is your opportunity. So Hans, there's a very ambitious lady at the back with a hand up like Flynn. So the first question is going to go like to you. We've got a microphone, so please just say who you are, what you do, and pitch your question. This is your opportunity. Brave panel, I say.
What are your concerns about the potential British exit from the EU and its effect on Ireland?
Thank you very much for the question. And I think it's a very good place to start because we're sitting here tonight and we're talking about the importance of British-Irish collaboration. We're putting efforts in place both at an industry level and indeed at a policy-making level to ensure there's greater collaboration between Ireland and Britain in the European Union in relation to international financial services. And you correctly raise a legitimate question in relation to will Britain remain in the European Union and what is the Irish viewpoint on that. I think, let me be very clear on this. Ireland is absolutely adamant that we wish to see Britain remain in the European Union. A European Union with Britain in it is a stronger European Union, but it's also a better European Union for Ireland. Ireland does significant trade in excess of 50 billion euro a year with Britain between these two islands across and back over the Irish Sea, in excess of 50 billion a year. But it also goes much further than just trade. It goes much deeper than that. I think the ability of Ireland and Britain to sit around a European table, to sit around a Council of Ministers table, and to engage on many issues, on many global issues, and also in relation to issues regarding Northern Ireland. Britain in the European Union is something we want to see continue. The Irish government stayed silent on the question of the Scottish referendum, not because we didn't care, but because we weren't part of that union. We are very much part of the European Union, and the government won't be shy in articulating its view that we believe Britain is best served in its own interests in the European Union, and that Ireland wishes to see its partner remain in the European Union. We're very respectful of the fact that there's an election shortly taking place in Britain, very respectful of the fact that it will be a choice for the British people. We have heard comments from the British Prime Minister in relation to reforms that he wishes to see take place in the European Union. Ireland will approach such a dialogue, if and when it should occur, at the European Union in a constructive manner, in an instinctive way, wishing to be supportive, but obviously needing to see the substance of what such reforms would look like. We all want to live and operate in a more business-friendly and effective and efficient Europe, and we're very happy to have a discussion and a dialogue. So we're extremely supportive of Britain in the European Union and hope that that's something that continues. And I hope certainly engagements like this showcase the importance of the relationship between two European member states in a very important area for both our economies.
I echo very much what Mr. Harris is saying there. The city's position is very much that it wants to see the UK remaining in the EU. It wants a reformed EU in many respects, but the city's agenda is very much a pro EU agenda, and that reflects the institutions in the city. 84% of the when the City UK last polled the city institutions and other stakeholders, 84% came back saying they wanted the UK to remain in the EU. So this is something on which there's a huge unanimity of view within the city. And the city, I think, recognizes that it needs access to the European Union. What we're talking about here in terms of capital markets union, the development of the capital markets across Europe is something which the city sees very much as it's having a central role to play in that. And the threat that a UK exit from the EU poses to that is significant. The city wants to, through engagement with Minister Harris and others across Europe wants to push that agenda forward. I very much welcome what you say, Simon, about the government's attitude, the Irish government's attitude towards any reform proposals that come up, because that is really what the city is hoping for, that there is an openness and an engagement around issues such as reform of the EU, so that we can get to the right result with a reformed EU, with the UK continuing to play a very full part in that body.
I think I spoke already about the fact that the out of the 840 plus promoters with entities in Ireland, 340 plus of those are UK based. So it's an extremely important market for us for our international financial services. Any uncertainty around that obviously does put question marks around Ireland's future growth in international financial services. Having said that, it's uncertain what the outcome would be. So I think to take that uncertainty away would be a good outcome.
Chris McGill.
Hi, Chris.
Just a very general question about the implementation of IFRS 2020. Are you targeting the government, as well as bringing home the diaspora, in terms of bringing businesses back to Ireland or establishing new businesses within Ireland that might actually help, for example, in the SME sector? So, for example, as far as I know, there's something like 20 new banks already to be approved by the PRA here in the UK right now. Shawcross is about to come to the market, Aldermore has recently come to the market, which is a very dynamic alternative financing and growth market in terms of buy-to-lets, in terms of peer-to-peer lending, and all of that sort of thing is government supported. So this is the kernel of the question.
Yes.
Is there anything within government in Dublin in relation to, say, you mentioned the strategic investment units. Is there anything interaction between you and they, which is working together to target specific financial services sectors, bring them into Dublin for the benefit of the wider economy?
Thank you very much. The short answer is yes. The Strategic Banking Corporation of Ireland has just begun its work. Maybe a matter of 6 weeks ago, the government made a decision, which I think is a prudent decision, that in an effort to get capital or credit rather to SMEs as quickly as possible, to use the pillar banks, AIB and Bank of Ireland, in the first instance to channel that fund rather than go through the costly process of setting up a standalone bank. But the SBCI is a legal entity in its own right, and the SBCI will, as it beds down now, begin conversations with other lenders, including non-traditional lending, and that's something that I know the SBCI are currently engaged with outside of the traditional banks. Some of the operations that you talk of are already in dialogue with the SBCI. I think the next point I'd make is the exciting part of the Capital Markets Union as well, in terms of a real opportunity to transform how funding is made available to SMEs in Ireland and indeed across Europe. The Department of Finance have begun a consultation on CMU on the Green Paper with our stakeholders. We're having a stakeholder engagement day on the 31st of March. We'll then go to formal public consultation, which is an option under the Green Paper. And very excitingly, we're holding a joint day, or at least our industry body in Ireland and the industry body here in the City of London are holding a joint networking day on CMU and its opportunities in Brussels in June, I think. So the short answer is yes, the SBCI is the new vehicle to provide credit to SMEs, and we are looking beyond just the traditional banks in terms of dispersing that funding. But I think CMU will take us to the next level in terms of SME funding.
I think, yeah, just to echo, just on the Capital Markets Union, what we see is Ireland is a fund servicing industry which is outward looking. So it's not just about the opportunities for SMEs in Ireland. I think there's a really big opportunity in terms of structures that could be located in Ireland, but that are being distributed right across Europe and being utilised right across Europe. And I think that's one of the biggest potential advantages that we could see coming out of CMU. If you look at the traditionally in the US, 80% of the financing was bank and or non-bank and 20% bank. You've had the opposite in Europe, where it has been 80% bank and 20% non-bank. Capital Markets Union is supposed to address that, and a lot of that activity in the US is through areas like fund structures, for instance, where we have a strong expertise already. So I think there's huge opportunities there.
I just want to come back in. Minister, you wrote down at the top of your page there, SBCT, and forgive my lack of knowledge in the detail, but I have a question around that. Obviously, we have just come out of a fairly tortured time. A bank bailout was one of the banes of Ireland's life. Lending to small and medium enterprises, does there need to be a change? And how do you control this lending to small and medium enterprises? This room, some people are possibly going to think that they actually want to go for funding. How easy is that going to be? What are you doing to make that process, methodology, and access to funding easier, but good lending, quite unlike what we lived through?
Yeah, no, you're quite correct. And I think the SBCI intends to change the way in which we go about approaching providing credit to SMEs in Ireland. It's acknowledging the fact that there has been a shortage of credit to SMEs over the last number of years, and it's setting about rectifying that. The SBCI, for the interest of the audience, has received its funding from the German bank KfW, from EIB, and from some of our own pension reserves. That has come together to provide a pool of funding. It's being distributed currently through our pillar banks, but shortly through more products. It has to be given out to SMEs, and if not, it has to be returned. So there's an incentive to the bank to give it out. It has to also adhere to more flexible terms. It has to recognise the fact that if you're setting up an SME, you might need a holiday repayment. You need more flexible terms. It has to provide a flexibility. We've also set up in the last number of years the Credit Review Office. If you're turned down for in terms of accessing credit, you can actually you can appeal that decision to our Credit Review Office. And we've introduced a government-backed Microfinance Ireland, whereby if there's a small sum of money for a startup that you couldn't get from a traditional bank, that you can actually apply to this government-backed fund. But again, this is very much an evolving area. It's a government effort to respond to what we've heard is a need from Irish SMEs. The Minister for Finance, my colleague, appointed today the board members of SBCI. I think anybody who looks through them, the list and their backgrounds will be encouraged by the fact that these are people with a real and practical background in business, in SME life, in SME representative bodies. But we're very open to hearing ideas if the products aren't fit for purpose or if there's more we need to do. But I think this is a welcome step.
Okay, let's open it back up.
One point, again, coming back to the Capital Markets Union, but coming back more generally to the functioning of the of regulation within capital markets, there clearly are issues around that. The SME sector has been the victim of a starvation of funds, which comes back in many ways to the fact that the wholesale capital markets haven't been operating as they should have over the last number of years, and some of the outputs of the dialogue that's going on at the moment between Ireland and the UK is very much focused on that, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, looking at the securitization sector, for instance, which is one strand of the capital markets union. To get that working again would be a very important contributing factor to the revival of finance for the SME sector.
Can I just make one brief advertisement? There's been a number of initiatives put in place over the last number of years, and to be quite truthful, the biggest challenge has been raising awareness of their existence. We now have an SME online tool in place. If you Google SME online tool, you'll actually get the website. You can put in a few facts about your business, and it will throw back up what of the 88 supports might be relevant to your business. Like we have an initiative, a seed capital, where if you set up a new business, you can actually get back some of the tax that you've paid into the state over the last number of years to put into your business as seed capital. It's raising awareness. I'm encouraged by the fact that the SBCI is going about it in a very professional way. It's taking ads on radio, getting the message out. But there's a lot of supports out there that I'm not sure there's a great awareness about, and the SME online tool is an effort to address maybe.
Is the Taoiseach giving you the marketing euros to actually get that message out there? Because there's a domestic message, Simon, and there's an international message, isn't there?
Yes.
You're focused on creating this international brand Ireland, again, yeah. Whatever respect that is at the bottom of your page. Sure. But the internal message, is the Taoiseach supporting that with marketing dollars and message dollars, euros, sorry?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and it's not a question necessarily of even new funds. It's a question of harnessing what we have. I mean, we have here, if you take London as an example, we have here ministers like me who can come. We have a business network like LIBS. We have a very proactive ambassador and staff in an embassy. We have the IDA on the ground. We have Enterprise Ireland on the ground. The purpose of the strategy
is to break down any potential for silos, pull everybody together and have everybody on message in terms of getting the promotional message about Ireland. That's what we're trying to do.
I'm going to do something now with the audience, because obviously this sold out in 3 minutes. Okay? You're a very special audience. Make the most of it. I'm curious. You're here to listen to the minister, you're here to listen to Susan, and you're here to listen to Vincent as well. What I want to know, just a show of hands, is if the situation was financially viable, the opportunity was there, who's got the desire in this room as a part of diaspora in London to return to Ireland in their mindset, perhaps in the next 5 to 10 years? Show of hands. Okay, that's an overwhelming response. The next question is, and then I let you guys respond. Who out of the group that raised their hand have a burning, deep-seated ambition to open a business or to get their current UK business to think about opening an office, getting a business opened and up and running in the Republic of Ireland? Can I say the North? I can't really. In the Republic of Ireland, because you are from the South. So, so I want a second show of hands now of those who think that that would be part of their ambition, a business for yourself or to encourage your business to travel to Ireland. Okay, still a reasonable number. That's your challenge in part of ways with diaspora, isn't it? And this is what creating this message is about. Vincent, you're an alderman of the city. Very interested in that. Must put my name down. What what does the city of London see or think of the competitive threat of the Republic of Ireland, not just the Pale?
Yeah. Indeed, we're all getting the message here tonight. Now, the city does not see this as a question of competition. I mean, and really, I mean, as has been discussed before, we're talking about a different scale completely to where London is vis-a-vis Dublin. The city would look at some other financial centres around the world and see significant scope for competition in the medium term. Dublin is a financial centre, a very significant European financial centre, which the city wants to see developing because it sees so many aspects of what happens in Dublin as complementary and this potentially strengthening the offer that what goes on here in London. I've mentioned it in the legal services sector. Many of the things I've worked on personally over the years have involved service providers in Ireland setting up the sort of structures that Susan mentioned earlier on, with significant requirements for Irish and English law input on those transactions. This isn't a competitive situation. This is using the two centres to achieve something that actually adds up to more than the sum of the parts.
Yeah, I would say, you know, I would echo that. It very much is complementary. There's certain activities that we would never do in Ireland. I mentioned them, you know, yeah. Things like global trading. There's other activities that we wouldn't probably think about doing in London because it doesn't make sense. They're probably scale activities, need a lot of people. Ireland is very well positioned, and our locations that we have, not just in Dublin but outside of Dublin as well, really help us to scale those activities. And they are complementary in terms of our clients' requirements. So the clients don't want to build out those requirements themselves. They use an organisation like State Street. So they may be an investment manager based in London who has part of their servicing done in Ireland by State Street because of the dynamics around experience and cost.
From the floor, anybody I want to come back and ask a question? Declan?
Thanks, Manus. I'm Declan Tiernan. I'm responsible for the client business here. It's for Oakley Advisors, which is an alternative credit manager. So a question, I suppose, for the Minister. I was very interested to hear about this sort of concept of a banner brand. We talked about Singapore earlier. And Manus, I suppose you mentioned the Middle East was the thing that prompted this question. Any of us who have been to Dubai, or, you know, and actually one place Minister, I know you perhaps haven't fully sort of developed the plan, but just some of the themes, or how is this branding going to be different from what, you know, what we've done?
No, it's a key question. I mean, I think Ireland's a very proud nation, and we always punch above our weight, and particularly after we win the Six Nations, I presume we go on to the World Cup. I presume we, we presume that the world knows our story. And we've seen on occasion they haven't. We saw when the head of the IDA was on an international news organization that was in Manises.
We know you've got the euro.
That was in Manises, and he was asked, you know, did we use the euro? I've seen this myself. I was in Germany last week, and you know, you're interacting at a high level with very senior people in industry, very senior people in politics, and you find yourself having to repeat a message and to get a message through that perhaps sometimes we take for granted. So that's why, and it might seem boring or it might seem unexciting, but that's why I think so much of the emphasis of the strategy in the early days, in the initial, is on the promotional, is actually on whether you're Susan Dargan in State Street involved with an industry representative group in Ireland and you're travelling to Hong Kong, or whether you're the Minister of State, or whether you're the Irish ambassador to London, that you actually have a branding that you can actually stand under. It's back to that ending the silo mentality. It's back to trying to arrive at a scenario where you don't have a government minister rocking up in a country to find out 2 weeks before an industry rep body from that country was in. And these are things that have been happening. And I don't think any country is perfect in this, but when I was sitting at the Asian Financial Forum in Hong Kong in January, and it was the first time Ireland had spoken at the Asian Financial Forum, first time we'd received an invitation. When I was there, and I could see so many of our competitors with competitive stalls, with selling their country. And there is so much excellent work. I have nothing but admiration for the work that goes on from our state agencies, our embassy network, our government, and I mean government with a small g, regardless of party makeup. There's so much good work that goes on, but we haven't pulled that together yet. And my ambition is that the IFS summit that we hold in Ireland in February next year, as the only English-speaking country in the Eurozone, can in time be something that can rival, or complement rather, the Asian Financial Forum. And just like they say, come to Hong Kong, come to a great forum about Asia, use Hong Kong as a gateway to China and a gateway to Asia, why can't we use Ireland as come to Ireland, learn about what's going on in the Eurozone, get an overview of the European economy, and use Ireland, the English-speaking country in the Eurozone, as a way of accessing the market. So that's largely where we want to be. We'll be working very closely with industry and very closely with our state agencies in terms of determining how best to develop that branding. But certainly when the IFS summit is in Dublin next February, it'll be accompanied by the new banner brand for Team Ireland.
One question from the sponsor at the front, and then it goes like this, because I've gone on too long. We'll have one question from the front.
Is that over the last number of years we've seen a lot of people who have come from Ireland to the UK. It's been very attractive, there are less opportunities in Ireland, and now we're starting to see people who are inquiring about going back. And the first thing they say, what we find is at the moment we're in a position where, well, we have to manage our expectations. And your expectations is what you earn here, you may not earn there. And therefore, the opportunities that you may have been presented are less. And so how, you know, the pound, we have, you know, rising house prices in Ireland, so the economy's going up, so the cost of living versus so many factors are impacting with deeply, you know, a cap on some of the payroll banks in terms of the bonuses, which are capped by the government. So how do you get around all of this in terms of, I appreciate brand, and brand is really important, but marketing can go so far until it gets to the reality and says, how does that impact me, how does that impact my pocket, and how does that impact my career?
No, absolutely, and I'm very proud of the cap that we have in relation to bonuses on banks, because as long as the taxpayer have bailed them out and until we've gotten all our money back, I think it's prudent and appropriate that we'd have that. But in relation to the broader issues, I think you're dead right, and I think this is certainly at my last Libs engagement, when I was talking to many people after in this room, they were real practical concerns, a bit like the show of hands here. I'd like to come back to Ireland, but, you know, can I get a house? Can I get an apartment? Is it worth my while? Is the government going to take all my money in tax? You know, the higher rate of tax kicks in at a pretty low income point. These are all legitimate questions. In relation to housing supply, I mean, it's supply rather than price being the issue. It's a lack of supply, particularly in areas around the greater Dublin area. And the government is beginning to address that. We'll be bringing a new planning bill through Parliament shortly, which will encourage land that is already zoned and that already has planning permission to actually be developed. And we look at measures to encourage developers not to sit on land without going back to kind of crazy policies that we saw in the past. In relation to tax, as I said, we've begun the process. This government has begun the process of lowering income tax at the marginal rate, increasing the entry point at the marginal rate. I have to be truthful. It's been small feed so far because we haven't had the flexibility to do more. But Minister Noonan, the Minister for Finance, has made it clear that that's something he wants to build on in the next budget. And I hope with more flexibility in the next budget, you know, sensible tax reductions that reward work and encourage productivity are something we'll be able to continue with. I think you're right. I mean, it's not kind of, I wouldn't like the strategy to be in any way, and I wouldn't like to articulate it in any way that suggests that, you know, the strategy is just about promoting our marketing at kind of a surface level. It's about promoting our marketing because I think we have a really good product here. I think the government can help industry in terms of its maintenance of cost by increasing people's pay in their pocket by reducing tax rather than expecting industry to necessarily increase wages. I think the housing supply is a very pertinent issue. I think the quality of life, though, in Ireland, I spoke to somebody here, and it stuck with me the last time I spoke to somebody here. They said London, you know, and this is just an anecdote as opposed to an opinion, but they said, you know, London's a great city to live in when you're young, but, you know, when I have kids and want them to go to school, I want to move back to Ireland. And I think there's quite a lot of that amongst the Irish community here in London, that they want to bring up a family in Dublin, in Ireland. But if people want to come home, and if there's people in this room that want to come home, the Irish government wants you to come home. The Taoiseach has made it clear that the next challenge in our budget, in the budget speech with the Minister for Finance, a key indicator of economic success is, can we get Irish people who wish to come home to return home? And I think, and I hope that we showed through our tax reductions that we want to try and incentivize that to make it worth your while to work in Ireland. I think if we get the housing supply right, I think that's another key point.
Closing one line from yourself, Vincent, and from yourself, Susan. Vincent, first of all.
I think it's what the minister has said is very, very positive, very, very interesting to hear that the government in Ireland is taking those sorts of steps. There's perhaps some lessons for the government here. Some of the policies sound pretty attractive to me. But the message I would leave you with is that the city wants to work with the government in Dublin, with the IFS sector in Ireland, to ensure that both the city and the Irish financial services sector grow and prosper over the years to come, within the context of a functioning EU.
Susan. Yeah, so in the context of the discussion of the last few minutes, what I would say is FSI is growing in Ireland. It is giving people opportunities for careers. So for people in the room who do want to come back to Ireland, there are opportunities. They may not be equivalently remunerated from a London perspective, but then you've got a different cost base if you're living here as well, I think. So, and it's not just about Dublin. I think we've said that a number of times. I see people come back and work for us in Kilkenny, Drogheda. So that gives you, we have career opportunities in those locations, and they're at the right cost base. So that differential between salary and your outgoings can make the difference as well. So I do see that there are significant opportunities, and there will be, continue to be, over the next number of years as well.
Thank you very much, Susan. Ladies and gentlemen, that brings this part of the evening to a close. I'm sure you'll all have an opportunity to grab a glass afterwards and mingle, and that's probably where the real networking is done, and where the real job opportunities and where the real discursives actually come. I'd like to thank, obviously, our host for this evening, Ambassador Dan Mulhall and his wife. Thank you very much to LIB and Shane Kelly for inviting me here this evening. But most of all, to, and it's not often I get to say this, you know what, I do a lot of tricky politicians. You're not tricky. So far. Minister Simon Harris, TD, thank you very much. Susan Dargan from State Street, and of course, Alderman Vincent Keaveney of the City of London Corporation. Thank you very much, Ambassador, and our panel.
You have been listening to a podcast by the London Irish Business Society. We would especially like to thank the Ambassador, Daniel Mulhall, the Embassy of Ireland, Great Britain, and sponsors Morgan McKinley, P-Cubed and Enterprise Ireland for their ongoing support. You can read more about the Society, its events, and join for free membership at www.li-bs.co.uk.